Got it all righty. Here we go. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. You text as well. Come on in through the State Roofing text line at 98973. Lots of news to get to. Oh, look at this. Hannah's going to jump in here. All right. But before that happens.
Diving in.
I didn't get a chance to jump into the Little Creek, which runs into the Yakima today, Tom. And I had to write Dougie and tell him that. And he seemed disappointed.
Why couldn't you?
Because I had to get in the car, get here. I didn't have time.
I see. Okay.
It takes a lot out of me physically when you get into that water. I have a whole new technique now. I was in there. And it is kind of weird to have like a 65-year-old man stand there watching me in my underwear screaming about my things freezing off.
Just have him hold a camera and then you'll feel comfortable.
Okay, all right, stop. Hannah, don't come in yet. Tom, that is a terrible thing to say.
But it's true. He holds the camera. He
does hold the
like
camera, but
the
Tom makes it seem like a porno movie or something like that.
Then we're getting back to Chris's theme song.
Okay, you know what? Hannah's coming in, and she's a serious reporter. So everybody, come on, put on your serious reporter
Zip it.
Faces. Here she comes. If it's not a peaceful protest. Or outraged taxpayers, or a long, boring press conference where we hear about
Washingtonians.
It is Scott.
My God, that was very good.
Thank you. I heard enough.
You're
of that.
Welcome.
Heard enough of that nonsense for the last year. All right, so here we go again. It's April. It's time to write your big check to King County, and people are happy, unhappy.
Not so happy. I mean, you know, everybody got, you could defer and get extensions and payment plans and all that stuff last year because of the pandemic. This year, that's just not happening. And, you know, your property tax bill is, the assessment is coming from January of 2020. So the pandemic doesn't impact that. But it's actually not the value of your home that's hitting everybody so hard. That's not so bad. Even I think in Seattle, it actually went down. It's the levies and the other local taxes that voters have approved that are tallying up. I mean, I think it's Algona's going up 18%. There's a bunch of areas that are going up nearly 20% Pacific that are all going up really high. And people were not expecting that. One person who was not expecting that was Erica Nagy. She could not believe the property tax bill her family got.
We were floored by basically the same level of increases, and in some cases more than we even saw pre-pandemic. And you know, talking through some of the numbers, you know, first of all, we are a small family-run portfolio of properties, right? Like, my parents have been here. They immigrated here from Hungary in 56. They were buying property when everybody told them they were crazy, when everyone was leaving. Literally the billboard of, you know, the last person that leaves Seattle, please turn off the lights. They were buying at, you know, 13% interest rates and sweating it every single month if they were going to make it, right? And they really believed in this American dream. And so they passed that on, and they've kept it the same, essentially, since they've owned the properties and even in some cases developed them themselves, very modest. And so looking through some of these bills, one of our tenants, if we were to push that all on them, would be paying, in essence, an additional 3 months' worth of rent due to the tax increases alone.
And those businesses, she says, that her parents rent to, it's like a bike shop and a nonprofit, who've been closed and struggling on their own during the pandemic. So she says this is especially bad in the pandemic.
This is the same small business that was shut down by our governor and told to do it for the good of Washington while our governor sits there and doesn't take any ounce of a pay cut. There is absolutely no recourse for the mismanagement of funds and basically, you know, the ineptness of our government.
Now, she was especially upset because of a note that came with the property tax bill that explained that the money is being used to cover investment in schools, parks, and public safety.
My kids can't go to a park because there's fecal matter and needles everywhere. My kids aren't going to school because the schools are closed. And they're doing this with a straight face as they're kicking all of us down during this pandemic. It is absolutely abhorrent. I cannot believe that this is happening. Got rid of all the police. There is no public safety. Like, at what point in time do they say, God, geez, you know, we sold them this and we actually delivered. And even if they don't say that, just say, we couldn't quite deliver because of COVID.
So she was very upset and sent me a picture of that letter that she got. But she's also upset because there, again, it kind of goes back to the eviction moratorium conversation where there's going to be these people who've been here for a long time, whether they're renting commercially or renting to, you know, people, renters who are living in their properties that are, they're just going to be priced out. They're just going to go because it's getting too tough for them to financially be here. And that's what some of the other people who spoke to Cairo 7 had said, is that this is a terrible time for this to happen. There's got to be some help somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Now, wait a minute. This is that's great audio. I love the woman's passion, but that is misrepresentative of what the story is. Is she talking about like commercial buildings? That's not the property tax bills that most homeowners are getting right now. They haven't gone up hardly at all at 4%, mostly. And as you mentioned in Seattle, even down the property values, the taxes that have gone up in places like you mentioned, Algona, Maple Valley, Pacific, and Enumclaw, up between 11 and 18%. Those are voted levies. So they're paying for a regional fire district. They voted to pay for school districts. All of her complaints are sort of like sidebar to the main thrust that anybody whose property taxes went up significantly were done on the backs of themselves. They voted for that.
But that is the point. And she didn't necessarily vote for that, nor did her family. But also the other conversation about because what the county assessor will tell you is that The problem is that 43% of your tax bill, your property tax bill, is those levies and those taxes that are approved locally. And the problem is that we are too dependent on those and we need a progressive revenue and all of this conversation. So that's the problem. And she disagrees with that. But also I think it is an interesting point that the levies are used to pay for these various things. Some of the levies are for schools. Some of them are for public safety, which is in King County, not in the best state right now. And that was her point, I think, with that. But I see what you're saying also.
So here's the breakdown for it. This lady would pay if this is in King County, 1% to the port, 2% to the library, 2% to Sound Transit, 2% other, 3% fire, 16 to the
Harbor
city
is in there.
Yeah, 16 to the city, 17 to King County. And then the schools, it adds up new state school tax. This is from 2018, 10, and then 18 state school levy, and then 29 local school levy altogether. That's 57% goes to the schools. My biggest problem is always you're spending 57% and the grades and the test scores haven't increased marketably over the last, like, say, 20 years. You would expect as you spend more that they would go up. But overall,
and that's her point.
Okay. Her other point is maybe she's renting to somebody and they're not paying the rent. She still has to pay on the thing. I'm seeing an article from 2018 when housing just spiked again and everybody was like, holy moly. And then they said, well, that's it. I'm out. Here's a couple that had the house. They bought the house for $50,000. This is an old story from 2018. And tax increase was 42% increase from 2014. I'm sure it's gone up another 10%. And there'll be another big wave of people simply saying, I can't afford to keep the house, pay those taxes. I'm on a fixed income. You're not a senior that can qualify, or you're not disabled that can qualify for that special benefit. What was it, Hannah? A 300% increase in people applying?
300% increase. Yeah. That was last year.
Yeah.
All right. So, all told this year, countywide, the property taxes collections are going up by $256 million compared to last year.
Okay. Well, what are you going to do? Huh? You get upset. That lady vented. Tom has a problem with her anger.
I have a problem with her anger representing the general status of property taxes. Property taxes did not go up much at all. I'm sympathetic to her plight if she's talking about commercial space, which is a little different than residence. The commercial space, it is true, the commercial space is getting hit hard because there are like vacancies there because of the shutdown and all this. The economy has not kept pace, and so a lot of those commercial spaces are going down in value. That will not be reflected until next year's tax assessment,
because this is a mix of properties that they have that she's speaking of.
Right.
Okay.
That's
I mean, if it's just the home prices didn't go up much, depending on where they are. But the key is if she's getting hurt, it's because these taxes are based on, the assessments are based on January, where things were in January. That's pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So next year she should get a break, if not before.
Not really, because of the levies and the taxes. And that's her main point.
Yeah, but the levies, you can't object to the levies if your community, now maybe she voted against the levies, but if her community voted to tax themselves, then you can't complain that they're getting taxed, which is what it sounded like she was doing.
All right. And I think her point is that kind of like what John's point just was, is that where's that money going? We're not seeing it. My kid can't go to school. Can't go to the park.
They are
and
going
no
to
cops.
School.
Tom,
you can't defend the schooling that's been happening in the state of Washington.
Well, you can explain it, but that's what the costs are for those teachers. They may not be ideal. They may not be in classrooms, but you can't say, there are no schools available.
I think what she said was schools are closed.
Physically speaking, there are people that would like a rebate. There is a bill, by the way, Hannah. I'd like you to see if you can follow it. I think it's maybe 5431. It's in the Senate. And what they'd like to do is have dollars follow students so that you get it's basically a voucher program again. The same thing they've done in Arizona, which is you would get $7,000 or $8,000 and you can take that and put it wherever you want. Go to whatever school you want. You're not stuck by a zip code. It probably won't get much of a hearing, but it's been thrown into the
hopper
anyway.
What's the bill number again?
I thought it was 5431 SB, but I don't know where it is right now. But I'll find it.
I'll circle back.
By the way, okay, circle back. You sound like the Biden White House. Sue Raw, are you on this story or no one on this
I am,
story?
Yes. Oh, I had a really long conversation with Sue today, and I wasn't sure where we wanted to go with it. So I've got her kind of talking about some training issues as it relates to some of the shootings we've seen. And then I've also got her talking about what she's going to do.
Let me just, but don't play it yet. Hold on. Sue Raw, people should know, she's the sheriff for the King County. She then retired from that and then went off and then worked as the executive director for the State Police Academy. She came in with a new idea rather than certainly having it be a military thing, rather than, you know, it look like something right out of the U.S. Army. Then let's try to have a different thing. Let's do protector rather than defender, right? Rather than enforcer. Let's do
Guardians.
Guardians. She wanted to call it guardians. So she's trying to change the whole sort of culture of policing. There we go. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. And she's done an enormous amount in that. She's key in I-940 as that got passed. She spent the entire last, I guess it's 2 years ago now, working with the community groups, the law enforcement groups, to come up with the rulemaking for I-940 and make it what it is today, which is our new police accountability law. And she's been very active in all of what's going on right now in Olympia with the discussions around police reform and accountability bills. But she will be done. She is retiring here just in a couple of weeks will be the end of Sue Raw's reign at the CJCTC, which is basically the state's police academy. I got a chance to ask her a little bit about the shooting that we saw this week, because that was the big question, a de-escalation. What's the training that's happening here? And when we see the video that came out last night with that particular shooting and some of the other shootings we saw. So Raw has not seen that video and she can't speak directly to that particular case, of course, but she can speak to the training overall.
There's four critical things when an officer is approaching the scene of this type of an incident. The first one, the officer has to de-escalate themselves. They have to recognize physiologically what's happening to you, take a breath, and make sure that you're staying in the right part of your brain for good decision-making. So you've got to de-escalate yourself, and you have to slow down the action. That is one of the biggest shifts in police training over the last couple of decades.
Now, she says it had been very different before, though. Like
traditional police training was rush in as fast as you can and physically control the person. What we have learned over time is that often escalates and backfires. So what we train officers now is try to slow down the action and seek cover. And cover, I'm not talking about concealment, but cover where you are physically safe from a threat. You know, if a person's waving around a weapon. Once you have slowed the action down and taken cover, now you have options and now you have the opportunity to use the skills and techniques that you learn in crisis intervention training and make that human connection to get the person talking.
So that's what the general overall training is right now. I would, just having seen the video, say that's not necessarily what happened in this particular shooting. But that's, you know, again, the overall training. And each situation is different. One thing she really cautioned against, too, is you can't really take the body camera video footage to judge always necessarily. because it's not all black and white, because the video camera doesn't account for the humanness of it, right? What the cop is going through and experiencing at that time is basically what her point was.
I just find that a fascinating point. When we think of de-escalation, we're trying to de-escalate, I think, the perpetrator or, you know, the criminal or whomever it is that you're dealing with. It hadn't occurred to me that, yes, de-escalation also takes place in your own, as you know, as the legal authority, as the police officer, law enforcement, that they themselves take a deep breath. It never occurred to me that that's right. They have to de-escalate themselves before they de-escalate the situation. Interesting approach.
Yeah, and definitely true. And again, that's what you can't account for, what, and especially, you know, a newer officer or somebody on his first call like that might be experiencing.
Well, if you if you listen to, I don't, we're gonna try to find it. You can hear the police go, "Hey, all right, hey, stop," and you can hear sort of a tone in his voice. Hey, and I have a story for it. Can I send you on not a wild goose chase?
Yes, sure.
Having a lot of friends that are police officers, can you find out what care is given to the police officers that take a human life? I know one guy in particular that killed somebody, and he has never been the same. Never, ever, ever, ever been the same.
And I can tell you, we'll do a follow-up, because there's a bill for this. There's a bill for this, and it's a bill that her, Sue Rahr's replacement, the woman who's taking over for her, says is one of the most important bills in the session. So I want to circle back to that. Sue Rahr's got a lot of stuff coming up, including writing a textbook with her son about the intersection of race and policing.
Oh.
Interesting stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Her son. Is her son a cop?
I do believe so, yes. Your youngest son, if I'm correct. That is
an officer. Look at us throwing Hannah a whole bunch of lefts and rights, and she's catching them all. You know?
Yeah, I got this. It's
okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Lacey. What's going on out there? Keel Mortgage, 1-888-7-8-K-I-E-L. That is Keel Mortgage. Give them a call. Save some money. Put it in your pocket, because you can refinance that mortgage of yours, because now, historically low, they could be going up. Keel Mortgage. My daughter is in Austin, Texas, Tom, and she does not have a blackout because her electric line goes right from past her house and right to the Capitol and to the hospital. So that part of Austin is not blacked out, although there is no food in any of the restaurants, none of the grocery stores. The place is completely, all the shelves are empty. She says, "Dad, you have to get up at like 5 in the morning and get in line." She hasn't been able to work for a week, and she called me for a loan.
Get used to it, Dad.
And I said no. All right. Facebook surprises the Australians with a news blackout. the idea is that for a while now, what has been happening is Australia and the media organizations there, the newspapers, have been saying, "Hey, Facebook, you take our stuff and pay all your wrong. And then you use our stuff, and then you make money off of our stories. You're taking our content." And then it was like, it would be like the paperboy throws the paper on the front porch, and somebody comes along and collects all the papers that the paperboy is leaving, and then goes ahead and sells those papers. The paperboy never got any money on it. Okay, so Australia says, "Listen, here's what you got to do, Google and Facebook, all of you. You have to be able to pay something to, let's say, the Australian Times, whatever paper it is that's there." And Facebook's like, "We're not doing that." And they basically got into a little bit of a peeing match, right, Tom?
Yeah. Well, in fact, so this, it still threatened the legislation. And so Facebook decided to pull a fast one on them and said, "Okay, Australia, you do this. Wait till you wake up tomorrow morning." And they woke up, the Australian Facebook users woke up this morning to no news feeds.
Right.
Not a thing. It's basically a blackout of news, and everyone is sort of like, "Hey." So this is a battle between titans. You've got media creators, and then you've got media distributors, basically Facebook, and it's a battle. Should the people that create content that ends up on Facebook be credited or not? And Facebook says, so to me, just on the surface, and there are a lot of deeper things going on here, but on the surface, I think that does seem fair. I think it seems cheap of Facebook to just be able to take all of the, you know, the stuff from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, or, you know, the Australian you know, Liberation News, I know, to be able to do whatever they want with it and profit from that. So I think I take the side of the struggling journalists, I would guess.
Well, to counter you, Tom, the guy with an American accent, he's a journalist and he's a big advocate for the open web. His name is Jeff Jarvis, and he was on Australian television, and he said,
with some disbelief, I think what happened here is that Facebook called the bluff of Murdoch and his politicians. The government said, pay up or else. And Facebook said, we'll take the or else. And the government saying, you can't threaten us. This is a non-market interference in what is going on here. If there were any sense in this, the platforms would be owed money by the publishers.
Here, now here's this theory why they would be owed money. Ready?
Or the platforms are sending the publishers traffic. This has never made any sense at all. It is blackmail on behalf of media companies who are cashing in their political capital to try to get money out of Google and Facebook, and they're using politicians in the process. It breaks the web, as Sir Tim Berners-Lee, its inventor, has said. It's a terrible day, I think, for the internet and for news all around.
So what he's saying is that Bob sends to Larry in accounting, hey, check out this headline, right? So and it's and there it is. So then Larry can click on that, which then sends him over to the Financial Times so he can read about monetary funds or something like that. You know, Larry does, right? But, so the benefit is that Bob sent that to Larry, and Larry in accounting's like, yeah, okay, yeah. So he goes over there, and there's a ding click for the Financial Times of London. So why would the Financial Times of London need to pay Facebook for it? They just got money because Facebook sent them the link.
Well, the thing is, and they say that they are not getting the fair compensation. If Facebook actually, every time, you know, they got a ding, they'd said, okay, so you may have profited 2 cents, but we profited 3 cents. They might say, well, that's, you're still profiting off us, you know, stay off of that. And I think what's happened, so Google and Facebook were part of this antitrust or this lawsuit against the Australian government. And Google decided, you know what? I take your point. I will give you something. And they did. So now Facebook is on its own.
Yeah.
So this is an attack on the tech titans.
Uh-huh.
And right now Google says, yeah, fair is fair. We'll give you some. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Facebook is stronger than Google and can withstand this or not, if there'll be public sentiment one way or the other. Because all of us, those of us that are neither tech titans or publishers, we might say, oh, it's just simpler. I just like to be able to get stuff for free. I mean, you know how irritating it is when we run into a paywall. God dang it, I want to read that. But it makes sense that they're trying to erect a paywall because that's exactly how they can justify publishing the paying the reporters.
I tell you something, so, I would not mind the paywalls. And I would pay them if they made it as easy as possible, which is just basically you hit the paywall, you put your thumb on the screen, and it goes, bing, you've just been charged $1.99. But you hit the paywall. Okay, you're in search of, I want to find out what is the percentage, how many people have brushed their teeth in the last 7 hours, right? It's all I want. And then all of a sudden, paywall. And it's like, email.
That's right. Oh, what's your mother's maiden name?
And then I just yell at Jacob, why don't we have this? And some of those small papers, it's like, oh, really? Oh, really? Tacoma? Was it Tacoma one that hits us? Tacoma? Is it Tribune?
The News Tribune,
Oh, you're not going to let me on even once? I mean, the New York Times gives you 5, right? Does it give you 5? And it warns you, you're up, you've got one more freebie, but Tacoma Tribune, boom, right off the bat.
The financial reserves of the New York Times are not comparable to the poor News Tribune bank account, I suspect. The News Tribune needs us more, John.
No, but you should learn this. What you do is you give them a couple of freebies. They just become your friend. But again, anybody out there, helping you by taking your story and putting it on the radio and then giving 15 minutes of commercial in between traffic. Come on.
So basically, Tom and Curly is like Facebook. We're using your stuff and we're not crediting you, but eventually people will drift back to you, News Tribune.
We do mention you so that people will click on there and find out how many people have brushed their teeth in the last 7 hours. All right. All right. Lacey, by the way, again, I don't know if this is a promotion or demotion or whatever. I was talking to Mike Salk the other day. You know who Mike Salk is?
I think so.
And he was saying...
No, I do.
Okay, you know what? If you don't know, then I am not going to move forward with this comment.
Yes, of course I know Mike Salk.
All right, he was saying, and Mike Salk's our boss, by the way. He was saying how lovely he thinks your voice is. And I said, I think she has a terrific sound on the radio. And I just thought I would share that with you. Alrighty. Welcome, everybody. Let's see, the man is 32 years old, and he doesn't know. Why give him a COVID vaccine, Tom? Why should he get a COVID vaccine? He doesn't need one.
Have you seen his BMI?
It's not good. Ian Thorpe describes how he was told he could get this vaccine, but then he was told he couldn't. So they said, yes. But then they said no.
So yesterday I got a text.
This guy's going to be in the wagon. I can tell. Yes. This is so obvious, Jacob. There you go.
So yesterday I got a text saying that I was to be offered my first vaccine against COVID, which I thought was a bit weird. I'm 32, no underlying health issues, and despite being a little on the chunky side, I wouldn't have classed myself as morbidly obese. So I checked in with the doctors, and they said, in fact, I was in group 6 priority list because of my excess weight, which was a bit of a blow and made me think twice about how many pancakes I had last night. It was a sad day. Anyway, the GP then rang back this morning after I'd questioned this and said it was a slightly nervous chap from the GP surgery who apologised profusely, said it was in fact a mistake. And when I inquired further, he kept a straight face as he told me that rather than 6'2", they had me down as 6.2 centimetres in height.
Okay, so I know that we're not on the metric system.
I know that's what's wrong with the metric system.
But again, 6.2 centimeters. So he's small. He could be in the jar with the teeny tiny lady.
Yes!
In the pickle jar.
He found her partner. So they find partner.
So they look on there, and somebody had put the thing in. So he seems to be very, very short. Very short, right? And then they look at his weight, because that number was not put in incorrectly.
Which combined with my current weight would give me a body mass index of 28,000, which is a little bit more than the 40 that you would currently be considered to be morbidly obese. Why nobody had checked in on this incredibly obese, incredibly tiny man who was just making his way around Liverpool, I'm not sure. But anyway, it's an honest mistake. And there is an important moral here, because we've spoken to the CCG here in Liverpool, and they said that mistakes are going to occasionally happen. And if, like me, you think maybe you've been wrongly given a vaccine appointment, it's best to get in touch and check just so you're not taking the place of someone else.
Yeah, there you go.
That's
the good news. The needle, by the way, with the syringe would be bigger and taller than he is, I think.
Yeah, it's 2.5 inches.
2.5 inches tall. So a little mix up. Same sort of thing happened in Spinal Tap.
Have you ever been to Stonehenge?
No,
the triptychs are 20 feet high. You can stand 4 men up.
Ian, I was
this
asked
is,
to
this
build
is
a triptych.
This isn't a piece of scenery.
Look, this is what I was asked to build. 18 inches, right here. It's specified, 18 inches. I was given this napkin. I mean...
Forget this.
All right.
Tiny Stonehenge.
Tiny Stonehenge. Is when they came down, remember? They were so tiny. And she said, I built the size you told me to buy. All right. By the way, I watched that movie with my son, and I was like doing the old man laughing at stuff that wasn't as funny anymore, but trying to get my son to get kind of caught up in the culture of it. Uh-huh. And at one point he goes, Dad, it's just not holding up. Just let it go. Let it go. Such a sad moment. All right. More sad moments. Lacey Evans, what's going on out there?